What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Born to Thrive. I'll be your host, Alex. And today's episode, we have a very special guest, actually our second Jordan on the show. And he's doing stuff and you can't see it. And so it's making me laugh. But Jordan brings a wealth of knowledge and expertise to the table as a former gym owner, certified PT, and MNU certified nutritionist, and someone deeply versed in biomechanics and anatomy. With a passion for fitness and a love for coffee, which I definitely understand, Jordan is here to share some insights, wisdom, and practical tips to help you thrive in your health and fitness journey. Jordan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a nice little intro.
Of course. It's funny because we do upload these to YouTube, but a lot of people just like listen to the podcast itself. And so I was like, they can't see what he's doing. And I'm going to sound like a crazy person because I'm doing this intro and I'm like laughing. So I'm like, hello.
I should have asked if you were putting on YouTube. I would have cleaned up my background, but it is what it is.
Fine.
Like it's a porn studio or something.
For those listening, he has like a green screen.
And people are jumping over to YouTube right now already. They're flying to YouTube right now. Yeah.
No, but it's you're good. I have my like messy bookshelf behind me, so you're fine. That's the story of my life.
Makes you look smart.
It does. That's what I like. I'm like, I've never actually read any of these books. No, I'm just kidding. I do know people like that though, who just buy a bunch of books and never read them. And I'm like, I'm so frugal, I couldn't justify it. My dad taught me well. But anyways, so I know MNU. For a lot of people who don't, their main specialty is like hormones specifically, I would say. Maybe I'm butchering what their specialty is. Yeah, you're like, I am butchering it.
I mean, what do you think MNU is?
I thought it was Vince Pitstick's thing.
Martin McDonald's thing.
What is Vince Pitstick's called? Oh,
no. The hell is Vince Pitstick?
You don't know who Vince Pitstick is? Okay, great. His is hormone specialty. What is, you said Martin McDonald? Oh, that's going to be whole nutrition, isn't it? That's going to be all nutrition.
Yeah, Mac okay, nutrition. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Okay. I like how I know who like McDonald is, but I was like, oh, okay.
That's so funny.
There's so many, all the OGs in the space have just their own things at this point. That's funny. I've read Martin McDonald's. No, I've read Lyle McDonald. Oh my gosh. There's so many.
Oh my God,
people.
Lyle McDonald. Another character, I guess.
Yeah. Gosh, there's so many. So for those of you who don't know, let me just say it real quick that it's like, there is a lot of OGs in the fitness space. And there's a lot of, what's cool is there, I feel like there's more and more people who are very well researched knowledge, like a lot of PhDs now in the fitness space who like love health and fitness. And they've all kind of created their own courses and specialties at this point. So would you like to explain what MNU actually is then?
Sure. MNU, which is called Mac Nutrition University.
Yeah.
It's a Martin McDonald's course. And basically it's without getting overly like, because obviously I'm super biased, it is where I've gained the majority of my understanding and learnings through nutrition. It's a year long course. And I'd say outside of going to get your PhD in nutrition, it's the best place for people to go if they want to learn to be a nutrition coach or work with people on a wide range of health related goals. Mm-hmm. I've had Martin on the podcast to like kind of talk a little bit more depth about this. If people are actually interested, if there's like people who want to be coaches, that's something, you know, people know of precision nutrition. We're not going to like shit on that at all. But I think if you're like, oh, I know what that is, this is what I would recommend doing instead. Let's say precision nutrition is cool, but no, like hate, but let's assume that they're like in the same kind of like sub academic, they don't require you to go back to school for this, but they are real courses. I'd say there are some serious differences and, some serious differences. And I'd say from a how serious it is, I know you use the word serious a lot. I think MNU takes the cake there. I mean, it's a very intense course structure with an actual test, with an actual serious amount of tests. As if it's like, oh yeah, there's the course, like to get a certification, something you should have to take a test, but like, that's not actually the norm. And so like a final exam, it's like the final exams are like really serious and not everyone passes and whatever, for whatever it's worth. It's like a serious thing that like, isn't like some weekend course or whatever. So yeah.
Cool. I love that. I think it's important because I think that I've done PN1 and PN2. So precision nutrition's level 1 and 2. I would say that PN2 is definitely a different, they should have just blended the two. I get why they didn't, respectfully, more money, because then the people have to like do more levels and stuff, but it should have been like a combined one. And I feel like people would have had way more wealth of knowledge. So I get it. But so I know that one of the things that you really like to talk about, because I feel like I've seen it on other people's podcasts, is reverse dieting. I'm assuming that's kind of your face. Is that what you're kind of like known to talk about at this point?
I mean, it's certainly a bugbear, and it's certainly like a thing that gets my blood pressure up a little bit.
Oh, interesting. And
have like a lot of personal experience with, not necessarily myself, but with just hundreds of people that I've worked with over the years. It's like certainly something I work with people a lot. And when I say people, I work with people a lot, it's like people who have been failed by that sort of style of marketing and approach. And
this is an interesting take on it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's the route you want to go down, or first of all, sure. I'll just start by saying from my end, I love you on Instagram. I think you're fantastic. I've only been following you for a little while. You kill it. I love your account. I think you should deserve to have even way more followers than you do. And I've never heard you talk. It's funny because every time I get on the podcast and somebody wants me to talk about reverse dieting, I have a clear indication of what they think about it. So that like allows me to
but you've never heard me talk about it.
Yeah. Not change what I would say, but like, it's good to go into a conversation with like some idea of like what the other person said. Cause you can
think.
Well, like just like now, I could have gone on a 10-minute rant, which I would never have done, but just because I don't believe it to be true. But let's say I just went on a 10-minute rant, like shitting on PN. And you're like, well, I did PN. So PN's great, but I'm saying like, it's good to know like what the other person thinks before you go on a rant. And so if we want to have
really, because it's not, I wouldn't fully agree with that because I don't think there's anything wrong with having a personal opinion. And I think that like, it's funny because I don't know if because I've done precision nutrition, you then think that like, there's a bias of me doing it. I think everyone needs to continue education all the time. I think I've learned a handful of things from precision nutrition, which was great and very applicable to certain clients. But then I also feel like I've learned so much more from doing continuing education from other programs. So it's like, I think the biggest thing is it's kind of similar to nutrition where it's like, take what you want and then go add what you need from other resources. And so it's kind of, which the reason I say nutrition in that sense is eat what you want, add what you need. There you go. Great. But I actually have no idea what your opinion is on reverse dieting. So before we actually get into it, because now I'm just genuinely curious, for those who don't know what reverse dieting is, would you love to explain it?
Sure. I think that that's actually where the beginning of this conversation starts. Can I throw that to you for fun? Just out of like a fun example of where this goes awry?
I don't want you to shift your perspective on what.
No. I want you to define it though, because I think that's where the beginning of this discussion goes. It's like if how somebody defines reverse dieting begins the flow chart of whether or not they descend into lunacy or are doing something totally normal that makes a ton of sense. And so, I mean, without even putting you on the spot, like if you're like, hey, reverse dieting is the process of finishing my deficit and returning to new caloric maintenance at my new body size and activity level, that's a totally real thing. Like, it's a real thing insofar as it must occur. Like, after you're done with your deficit.
Yeah, you have to go back to new perceived maintenance.
You must pursue, like, being done with the deficit, like, is synonymous with finding new caloric equilibrium, maintenance, energy balance at your new body shape and size. And if you're going to call the process of doing that reverse dieting, you got nothing for me. I think that's awesome. You have to do that. And if we're going to call that reverse dieting, I'm on board with it.
Kind of just finding your maintenance the way you just explained it. Finding new perceived maintenance.
Sure. If you're going to use it.
I'm really curious what people have done that have like failed them. I hear less stories of that. So this is why I'm curious.
You're very, that probably is a good thing based on like, what your feed says.
But that's wild to me because we have so many clients who have gone through yo-yo dieting. That's definitely like our, as you can probably tell by my content, that's our demographic. It's like a lot of people have been failed by the dieting industry. To be fair, it's like most standard diets don't really focus on reverse dieting because usually they just throw them into a diet and then just say, good luck, you've reached your end result and now figure it out for yourself. So there isn't even a consideration for now getting back to maintenance and what that even looks like. But I'm really curious if that's kind of more what you're thinking about when it comes to people who have been failed by it, is that people just aren't even presented with the tools and the resources to even get back to a new perceived maintenance and understand what that's like.
Totally. I love that because that's absolutely one thing, which is like, let's start with like how we're defining reverse dieting. I think the definition we just went through is awesome. And I think people are failed within the context of that definition by a lack of emphasis on that portion of the whole process. And I'm down with that. That's actually not where my bugbear is. Although that's a totally,
I've never heard bugbear until you said that either, by the way.
Grinds my gear. I don't know.
Like, no, I get. I figured out what it meant right away. So. I was like, what is a bugbear?
You're like Googling in the background. You're like, what is bugbear?
I was like, it sounds like something that context bothers you. And I was like, cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a bug. It's a bug that you bear.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And I'm actually not sure if I've said that like in real life. And now I've said it like four times on the podcast.
You have. So, and that's why I was like
pointing that term in the background. So my bigger gripe, is the idea that, and there's a lot of problems because reverse dieting has a lot of definitions, like the idea that you can effectively boost your metabolism in a meaningful way such that by the process of reverse dieting, you can then be able to cut on higher. I'll list a bunch of things. You can, things you'll hear. It's like, oh, reverse dieting will help you cut on higher calories later, or you need a reverse diet because your metabolism is suppressed and this will fix it. Or you've plateaued with your weight loss and reverse dieting is what will fix it. Or you're not losing weight because you're not eating enough. You need a reverse diet. Like all of those things are physiologically just factually untrue.
I see where you're getting the frustration of like the misinformation marketing.
I'm not saying it's the worst part, but it's tricky because if we're like, if we're looking at the term that comes to mind for me is collateral damage. And so like, if I post about reverse dieting and how none of what I just said is true, and we can talk about how we know that and all of that, that's fine. If that's the route we want to go down, I'm fine with me. Cause there are a lot of people that are hearing that they're like, for the first time, they're like, oh, I thought that's a thing. My whole my whole feed is full of people, coaches putting a picture of two people where the person on the right is eating 600 more calories and they're leaner and this is how they lost weight. And we got her calories up to 2,500. Then we dropped to 1,600 and she lost weight when she was eating 12 and not losing weight. It's like that whole thing is just not true. Now, the thread here that is difficult is that every time I post about it, there will be people who have had an experience of I raised, for my non-YouTube peeps, like in air quotes, like I raised my calories and that's how I lost weight, or I raised my calories and ultimately allowed me to cut on high. Like they will say, I had an experience that actually sounds counter to what Jordan's saying.
Yeah.
And that is true, right? That is true. I'm not negating your experience. I'm just telling you that's not what actually happened.
Happened. Yeah.
You raised your calories in MyFitnessPal or, you know, whatever. And you were now able to adhere because it was a higher amount of calories. And what actually happened was, by actually hitting your calories, although it was a higher target, you probably ate less on average.
Yeah.
And that's how you were able to lose weight. And I think it's frustrating because if we're going to go deep on this, I'll start by saying everybody who's had that experience, who's listening right now, I'm stoked for you. I'm so happy because it always ends in a good place. Everyone's always like, oh, I'm in a good place. I love that for you. I'm so happy. But I firmly believe and I don't just believe this out of thin air, but for every one person who has a good experience, there's 10 people who were sold down the river and who have gained a bunch of weight that they didn't want to because they were told that they came to a coach, I'm eating X. The coach is like, no, your metabolism is suppressed. If you're eating that much, we need to increase your calories. They gain a bunch of weight. Mm-hmm. The coach says, oh, you just, you know, the client's like, oh, what's happening? And they're like, oh, you just give it time or you're not doing it long enough. We got to push your calories higher. They gained more weight. They didn't want to. They quit. And then they come see me and that's their frustration. And so I think we can get that person who had a good experience. We can get them their good experience without those selling those 10 people down the river and pushing them in the other direction. That's my frustration, bugbear, gripe, gear grind, whatever.
Okay. I agree with that 100%. I've done content about something similar where like people wonder why they're able to lose weight when they suddenly start eating more. Like literally that was exactly what I said. And I was like, it's not because you're eating 1200 calories a day and you're not losing weight. It's because you're eating 1200 calories a day and you're not able to adhere to that amount. And then suddenly you overconsume the second you feel overwhelmed with your hunger and you're technically on average eating more. And so you're not actually eating 1200 calories a day. And it's a really hard thing for people to hear because I can't actually suggest why everyone says it that way because obviously everyone's going to be different. But okay, great. Go for it.
I'll tell you, because so let's I'll ask you. You're a person who's eating, thinks she's eating 1200, and I picked that number arbitrarily.
Yes,
yeah. Is not losing weight, and you have two people in your ear. One person says, "Hey, 1200 is really low. You might eat that once in a while, but on average, you're eating way more than that. Either you're missing calories or you're having occasional binges. You're actually eating way more than that.
Yeah.
We need to attack that issue and then have you learn to eat less." Other person says, "Nah, you need to eat more." Like, how much better does that sound? Like, that sounds, the marketing's elite. I have a person who's struggling to lose weight, and one person says your problem is you're not eating enough. Other problem says you're eating too much. Who are you going to go with? The person who says, "Oh, you got to eat more." I mean, it's the best marketing. It's elite marketing.
Yeah.
It's just a no-brainer.
Yeah. I mean, I still think I get the marketing aspect. I think from like a human level, sometimes people can feel like they're just not ready to address that fact of like the overconsumption on the weekends or things along those lines. Because like we've had a lot of clients like that who like, they'll say they're eating 1200 calories a day. And then we kind of get down to more of the nitty gritty of even just, I mean, not even nitty gritty, just literally the small aspect of just measuring your food or even just keeping a food log. Then suddenly you're like, "Oh crap, I actually am eating like 2800 calories on the weekends." And it's like, "Oh, okay, great. We figured it out." But a lot of people aren't ready for that level of self-awareness yet because it's scary. It sucks to realize that it's like, it is actually because of my own doing.
And would you be a client saying that right now, be yelling in your face that you're definitely, that you're just not doing that, you know? Because we're on the podcast, I'm okay being that blunt, but there's an art of coaching where you know that's what's happening.
Yeah.
And people will say to me, coaches, they'll DM me on the side or something, be like, "Hey, like, you know, I know that's what's happening, but, if I don't say that at all, and I just do this reverse dieting thing, if I get to the same outcome, who cares?" And I'm like, "Yeah, if you do, that's a net positive, but there's a chance you don't. And there's a way you could increase the chance that there's a positive outcome. And it's by being, again, like you said, some people aren't necessarily ready for that amount of self-awareness. I'm not disagreeing with you. I think that it highly depends on how you're communicating that, for sure. I know you'd agree with that, but there's better and worse ways to like tell somebody they're not doing what they think they're doing. I just find that, like, I don't want to be condescending when I say this, but I think it's intellectually lazy to say, well, instead of telling them the truth, or instead of over time figuring out a way to do what's right by what's actually happening, I'm going to lie to them and hope that this has a positive outcome. I just think that that's a lazy point of view from a coaching perspective.
That's interesting, because I think there's a way to be direct without being, I guess I'll use the word blunt since you said blunt, but I feel like there's a way of being direct without being overly blunt and like feeling like it's an attack on them. And also, I don't think that there is, I see where you're coming from in the sense of, I think that there is obviously it's a high passion point for you, because I think that you see a lot of people who do inherently lie because they want to make people feel great. Cause I mean, I see it all the time with people who come to us just wanting to lose 20 to 30 pounds. And then they're like, I'll ask them, like, where do you feel like you fall in the spectrum of 6 to 12 months to reach your goal? And it's interesting because a lot of people will say, well, probably 6 months. I could probably do it in maybe even like 3. And I'm like, no, it's going to be closer to 12. And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, like, they're like, oh, I've talked to this coach and they told me I could do it. And I'm like, they're saying that because they just want you to sign up. And I'm like, I don't want you to have unrealistic expectations. And I think that's where the fitness industry has failed so many people, is they set people up for failure. And it's not just the fitness industry, diet industry as a whole has done it, where they are inherently giving people unrealistic expectations and then making people feel like they're the problem, when we're the ones who have the obligation of setting a more clear outline of results.
Yep. I think the reason it has become a topic for me that gets me fired up, let's say, is I've thought about this a lot. Like, why is this a thing that bothers me so much, as if it's like I stay up late at night thinking about it, which sometimes I do, I guess. But I think it comes from, like, if you were to think about weight loss, like, there is like a fundamental truth of you're not losing weight, you're not in a deficit. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we can't agree on that, like, this rhetoric of reverse dieting to boost metabolism, to kind of undo yo-yo dieting, your metabolism's suppressed, it's all it all spits in the face of that universal truth. There is no amount of eating more that will affect how your body adapts to less calories in the future. And there, it's all of this circumnav. It's like a flow chart of, like, I think of it, the world in flow charts. Like, this first question, if we can't agree on this, it's a non-starter. Like, there's nowhere to go. There's nothing you can do. Now, we can take a route of habits. I love that. We should totally do all of that. But like, if I'm talking to somebody and we can't first agree that this archetype of person is actually not doing what they think they're doing, which is they're not actually in a deficit, and that there's nothing they can do about that in terms of eating more to come back down. If we can't start with that, it's, it's a non-starter. And so I think that that's like, it flies in the face of the fundamental truth we must begin with. We can't agree on that. It's really tough to move forward.
I agree. It's interesting because I feel like it was just, there's so many conflicting thoughts I have in my brain, not with what you said, more with the, obviously, I think so many people do understand that we do have to be in a deficit of some kind. But I also think that so many people do the fad diets, do the quick fixes, and don't understand that the reason that they're working is because inherently they are putting them in a deficit, because you give an arbitrary rule of like, never eat carbs. Great. You're cutting out an entire food group. Of course, you're going to be in a deficit. Intermittent fasting, you're closing your window. So I am genuinely curious, because I know we've kind of gone down like a couple different routes. What is your definition of reverse dieting?
The first one, the only one that exists, which is just like the return, the end of your deficit. If you're going to say
interesting, that actually was your definition.
Well, I just mean if the diet is the way down, the reverse diet is the way back up to your new caloric maintenance. I'm cool with that. And I'm totally cool with that.
Well, obviously, there's a lot of people who argue the fact that like, you don't really have to go through a reverse diet, because you could just bring them back to a new perceived maintenance, figure out, is that actually what it is? Because obviously we don't know for sure. And so it's like, you just kind of track weight, do things like that. And then from there you can make modifications that make sense. So I guess that is a good question, is do you typically, and I don't know how much you coach, because I know you have coaches under you, right? You have a team. No. Why do I think you have a team?
Just have a group coaching platform, but I'm the only person who does the coaching, and I do one-on-one coaching.
Cool. Okay, great. So I guess my question is, do you find that you typically go down the kind of now standardized route of slow increase of calories, decrease of activity levels, things like that? Or do you find that you tend to gravitate towards the jumping back up to a new perceived maintenance?
Yeah. So the physiological truth is that there's no benefit to going slow.
Yeah.
Practical reality is that I don't do that. The physiological truth is there is the, if we are just operating with the definition of reverse dieting, is this process of undoing your deficit. There's no benefit to undoing that deficit slowly or undoing it quickly. Mm-hmm. There's frankly only a benefit to undoing it fast mm-hmm. as possible.
Yeah.
However, there's just too many unknowns to be like, hey, like, let's plug your stats back in the calculator. Let's jump right to wherever it says. It's like, well,
that's not accurate.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, the irony is it is accurate. It's you that's not accurate. And that's not an attack on people. It's
interesting. Baked in. I see what you're saying.
Variance in the way we do things. The calculator you used is accurate and doesn't account for all the variances that include natural human error, but also include difference in strategies. Like, am I tracking raw versus cooked, or do I track green vegetables and condiments, or do I track macros, or do I track calories and proteins, which are sometimes a little off? Am I tracking net carbs? There's so many like variables that it's like the calorie calculator is not taking that into account, nor is calorie calculators on average can be off by up to 800 calories on either end, plus or minus. So in a perfect world, you'd have like this like unbelievable technology, which exists, I guess, to put you in a lab, calculate your new TDE and jump there. But so on one hand, we have jump right to your new expected maintenance, which is in theory what you would do. In practice, really tough to tell where that is. Mm-hmm. The other route is like this mega ultra slow, add 50 calories a week just from carbohydrates, which probably puts somebody unnecessarily in another 6 weeks of a deficit. And I tend to be a little bit more in the middle, where I would use the data that they have. So if you're eating 1400 calories and you've been losing a pound a week, I make that up, but like, you can reverse math that and be like, okay, you're in roughly a 500 calorie deficit.
Yeah.
And instead of maybe jumping all the way in those 500 and we predict your maintenance is 500 more, I might jump halfway there right out of the gate and use that as like, a chunk of food that represents enough to make you feel better. And then maybe inch up from there would be a practical approach.
Makes sense. Pretty straightforward. So I'm going to, I'm going to go this direction of metabolic health because I just find it interesting. So, because I am curious now your thoughts on a lot of stuff. So what do you feel like some of the, what are some common misconceptions that people have around metabolism and how do these misconceptions actually impact their approach to fitness and nutrition?
Yeah, I think a big one is that metabolic adaptation is something that we should be talking about.
I was waiting for that one.
It's something that we should be talking about and worrying about. And it just isn't. So I think top level, it's like, it's funny, like metabolism and hormones are two things that are fascinating.
Yeah.
The average person should never be thinking about them.
100%.
They are on a metabolic adaptation side, just you cannot do anything to how you adapt metabolically to more or less food. There's nothing you can do to your body. It is a genetic thing. And so if you are somebody who has, you know, we've talked about there's like metabolic phenotypes, like people who have thrifty metabolisms, people who have spendthrift, people who adapt less when you give them less food. And that's a more potentially more favorable for weight loss. And then we have on the flip side, people who adapt more when you give them more food, which is more, makes them more resistant to weight gain. But like, those are not things you can do anything about. And metabolic adaptation is a thing, totally. Mm-hmm. It's not stopping you from losing weight. And there's nothing you can do to improve it in air quotes. And so I'm always like, it's not permanent. It's not stopping you from losing weight and there's nothing you can do about it. And so I'm just always wondering why we talk about it so much, like understanding that it will happen in a weight loss phase, like understanding that you will adapt.
Yeah.
Is okay for a client to understand, oh, like we plateaued because this is what happens. You know, you, first of all, the biggest adaptation your body makes is the loss of tissue. Like people are like, well, metabolic adaptation is why I plateaued. It's like, no,
you less.
You're smaller. The smaller machine needs less energy. So metabolic adaptation is not permanent. It's not a reason you can't lose weight. And there's nothing you can do to change how you adapt. And so I'm always curious why we talk about it so much. I think I've said before, it's something you should acknowledge exists, but no more than that.
Yeah, I think you make a great. I think you bring up a lot of great points. Just because, one, I agree. It's interesting how many people will be like, "Oh, I've been told that like my metabolism is broken," and I'm like, "You can't break it." I'm like, "That's not how it works." My favorite's a girl I just saw lately who said that. What did she say exactly? She said something about how when insulin's in your bloodstream, your fat stores get locked, and I'm like, "That's not how that works." And I'm like, "It's not an on-off switch." The face you're making is interesting to me. Are you like agreeing with what she said?
No. I mean, there's partial truths that insulin blocks fat
activation. Well, yeah, but that's so
irrelevant.
It's a fear mongering tactic from her. He's shaking his head yes, because I'm like this. I was like, don't misconstrue what he's thinking right now. But I agree because I see so many people thinking that their metabolism's broken and not understanding the fact that, like we already talked about, is the fact that when you get smaller, you just typically will burn less calories on a day-to-day basis. Like you have less weight that you're carrying around. One of my favorite things is seeing the people who like have lost significant amounts of weight carrying around how much weight they've lost. And they're like, wow, I don't even remember how I could have been doing this. And I'm like, yeah, it's different. It feels significantly different. And so I agree with that. And I also agree with the fact that there's such, because we work with a lot of clients who have PCOS and other hormonal conditions. And it's interesting because so often, and this is again, the really unsexy thing to say, people worry so much about how to optimize their hormones. And I'm like, you haven't even nailed down the basics yet. Like you're not even just eating enough on a day-to-day basis. You're not sleeping. You're like just caffeinating yourself like crazy as a fellow caffeine fiend. It's like, but you're wondering why you're not seeing progress. And it's like, even just the small act of getting those things together can help you immensely.
Yeah.
I agree with what you're saying.
I just think, that there's an element of like, there's a lot of, and you know, it's so funny. The word entitlement, like, is a word that gets people really on edge. But if you just look at what the word means,
does that get you on edge? Because I was like, I mean,
it's like, It's just like when people, like, if you call someone entitled, it's like a really deep, you're like attacking their character. And so when I'm say what I'm going to say, which is that when it comes to weight loss, a lot of people are very entitled. What I mean is they have a big expectation of what they think should happen and what it should cost and what it should take. And so I think a lot of people are tripped up with the number they see on the sheet compared to the number they saw on the calculator, compared to the number they saw on their favorite influencer. And they're thinking it should be going down faster. It should be going down. I should be able to eat more. And I think if they operated a little bit more just isolated tunnel vision on themselves, they didn't get emotional about the number in absolute. I mean, I've seen people 200 plus pounds eat, you know, 6-7 times body weight in calories to lose weight. And they feel just fine. Their health markers are just fine. They don't lose weight very quickly. It shows that they're not. And I've seen people on the other side lose at like 13, 14, 15 times body weight. And if that first person was comparing to the second person, it's a really unfair scenario, but we waste so much time with like, I shouldn't have to go that low. That's, I mean, all the time. Instead of, I'm like, well, why are you, again, emotional is another word that's.
It was funny. I was about to actually ask you about that.
There's like a lot of like, if I say 1200, people have feelings about that number.
But which isn't fair.
Yeah. Why do you have a feeling about that number? Like I have a client that got a lot of people on edge. She's 160 pounds, gets like 12,000 steps a day. And she had to eat like 1200 to lose. And the whole time it was triggering for me. I'm like, oh my God, am I doing something wrong?
It sucks as the coach to do that.
Yeah. And she's tracking as accurately as I could ask someone to track.
Yeah.
And I'm like, she feels amazing. We got blood work done. She lost slowly. She felt satisfied. She felt satiated. It's a good sleep, good workouts. And I'm like, if I myself can detach myself from the number of calories she's eating, I'm stoked with how she's doing. And that taught me a lot of like, we need to just back away from the numbers in absolute and deal with the individual and the situation at hand.
I agree. I think that it's funny how I had the same reaction where I heard 1200 calories. I was like, she's how tall and weighs how much? And she needs 1200 calories to lose weight. That's wild. And it's like, it is true that everyone's just really different. Like everyone's highly individual. The thing that's hard is it seems like we're both very like logical people. And that's absolutely no offense to anyone else. Cause some people tend to be more like data driven. Some people tend to be more emotionally driven. And obviously we still have emotions. We're not like sociopaths, but it is hard to be fair. He just made a face and he was like, well, but it is hard because we obviously want to see people succeed. Your dog is so adorable. His dog, like in the back, just like chilling.
There's two.
Oh, there's two. Oh, there's a big fluffer and a little fluffer.
Yeah, a little Shih Tzu, Havanese, and a golden doodle.
Oh, there you go.
They'll say hi at the end.
My dog's passed out currently, just absolutely passed out. But I find it so interesting because even I had the same kind of emotional reaction the moment you said 1200 calories, where I was like, damn, that sucks. It sucks to do that. But also like as somebody who's 5'2", and if I ever wanted to like step on stage, I would probably have to get pretty low with my calorie intake to be able to do that. I don't have to do that to get to the point that I want to be at comfortably. But I guess a good question is, because obviously you coach clients and we understand that people are human and we have emotions and that's fair. So what do you do or how do you handle kind of navigating the very human side of an emotional attachment to things?
Yeah, that's a great question. I try and keep people focused on their biofeedback and the data. Like the biofeedback is how you feel. The data is physiology of the size of the deficit you are or are not in. Mm-hmm. And if we keep that, what's funny is like, I use this example. It's like if you've never like gone to Europe, let's say, and you take your first trip to Europe and you go into the gym and everything's in kilos and you have like, you no longer have any emotional attachment to the numbers. You're just like trying to find a weight that works for you. And so the problem with calories is we all have a feeling about those numbers. And if I could just put an algorithm and you put 1300 and it automatically changes to like 46.6. It's like weighing yourself in kilos has been a strategy that people have talked about to improve relationship with the scale. Cause you don't really have an emotional attachment to that number because you're not like familiar with what it means in relation to what you've been told your whole life. And so I try and keep people more focused on how they're feeling and what their quality of life is. And then also what the data is telling us. Cause that's really ultimately what I'm like, what, what's my goal? My goal isn't to get you to eat a certain objective, absolute mm-hmm. number of calories. My goal is to get you to feel a certain way, quality yeah. of life wise, and change your body composition in a way that you like. And to do both of those, nobody said anything about, oh, I need to eat this many calories. It's like, well, like maintenance is about you having a good quality of life and eating an amount of food that maintains your body weight. And so that's mm-hmm. what we're pursuing here. And if that happens to be X or it happens to be Y, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter to me so much. It should matter to you in absolute. Mm-hmm. And that's really like had been my North Star now with just like something I keep in the back of my mind is like, hey, we're not like looking for a specific number. If mm-hmm. you start gaining weight over the next couple of months, like that's a surplus, you know, and we need mm-hmm. to just operate under that as an objective truth and decide mm-hmm. what we want to do with that information.
Interesting. Okay. I like that. Cause I think that it can definitely be challenging for people, understandably so, just because as a society, we've put such a hyperfixation on expectations on the scale. And so it can be hard to like navigate that. And I actually just recorded a podcast episode this morning talking about how like we measure progress is so skewed because you can, I guess I am curious about your thoughts on like body recomposition, just because obviously I am under the realm of like, you can lose fat and you can build muscle. Obviously there's more to it than that, but it's like, that's where the scale can be a hindrance for a lot of people because maybe it isn't moving as fast as they want. They then just suddenly think that they've failed, but that's exactly why we obviously focus on biofeedback as well, because it's like, if your relationship with food's improving, if you have better energy throughout the day, are you really doing anything wrong? But it's so hard to remember that. So you're such an interesting human. Like I said, I don't think we actually said that. This is our first time actually like talking. And so we follow each other on social media. So like I've seen his posts and I knew he was very opinionated on certain things, which is interesting. I don't disagree with any of your opinions, by the way. I think they're not even opinion. A lot of them are fact. So it's kind of, you can't really disagree with it. Which is also funny because that tends to be what a lot of my content's around is the fact that I won't attack somebody's character and I will never like bring somebody down in that sense. I go for logic because I'm not here to make you feel like bad about yourself. I don't really like that other people do that, but I'm going to tell you logically what you're saying doesn't make sense. Interesting. I feel like I have so many thoughts going around my brain. Is there anything specific you actually want to talk about? Because I feel like now I'm like just thinking about metabolism, reverse dieting.
Yeah, I could see if we could close the book on reverse dieting, if there's anything, I just think if there is a loose end, you know, I'll just leave people with one thought. If you heard me say that girl who's like 5'7", 160, you know, eats 1200 to lose weight. And when I say to lose weight, I mean, she loses like a third of a pound a week. Like we're talking like a moderate amount.
Yeah.
And she tracks really accurately. Blood work's amazing. Feels super satiated. Feels like super satiated. I mean, like, it's funny. It's She's like, if it looks like a duck, sounds like a duck. Food.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I'm like, okay, she's losing a third of a pound a week and she feels subjectively the way she's giving me feedback, like she's in that size of a deficit, a mm-hmm. lot of people will be, you know, will have I'm the same way.
They'll say 1200 is not a lot of food. Down.
And what they'll say is that's wrong. Like that there's something wrong about that. And my question is to that person and for people listening that aren't going to be able to answer me, like, I just want you to think like what, if that's wrong, what do we do? Like, what mm-hmm. would you do? And the answer typically is, well, do you reverse diet her? And then we go down the route of that's not a thing. And it's not even that it's not a thing. And I'm going to close the book now because you can get me going. Like, it's not even like it's not a thing. Like, we have conflicting research. Like, we have a ton of research and all of it points to this is not a thing. So it's like, if there was a bunch of data on both sides where like you can pull your like rat study about seed oils and like tell me that there's this mechanism. Gosh. There isn't. We have a mountain of data that would sink the Titanic on this isn't a thing. And so that's like, people are like, that's wrong. I'm like, well, then what would you do? And they're like, first dieting. I'm like, all right, then we start this whole conversation. So we're going to close the book on that.
Well, what's interesting is I feel like a lot of people, not everyone, obviously, I think there are a lot of people who just kind of harp on it for a different reason. But I think there's a lot of people who also kind of go for the psychological aspect of it. Like I know I've heard Lane Norton talk about that before, of just like the pure psychological side of the fact that some people get scared seeing the scale go up because obviously you start eating more, even if you're technically roughly around a new maintenance, even if you're being conservative, you're eating more carbs, you have more food in your stomach, odds are the scale is still going to go up, especially if you are a little bit more aggressive about it. We definitely operate in our team in the realm too of like, we want to get you back to maintenance as fast as possible because like it doesn't do you any benefit to stay at like a big deficit otherwise. But I guess I'm curious in your thoughts on like the actual psychological part of it too, of like the benefits of that.
Of
I'm taking it slower
on the way back up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's why I wouldn't jump all the way there, because one, if you do, you risk the shot, you risk overshooting. And usually I'm dealing with a person who is, I mean, afraid is the correct word, but I'm not trying
to put a fear factor around it. It's funny. I was going to say the word afraid too.
Yeah. They're afraid of weight regain. And so they see going slower and extending the period of eating less as less fearful than, or less of a downside than overshooting by accident and gaining a couple extra pounds they didn't have to gain. And I sympathize with that. I think people come to me who have lost weight many times. And so I'm kind of here to be like, yeah, let's lose weight and let's keep as much off that as is practical. So I'm if they're like, you know, what's so funny is like, you should increase their calories in a way that is correlated with how bad they feel. And so if I have a client who's finishing their deficit and they're like, I feel okay, I feel fine. Like,
yeah,
they're like, I'm a little tired, I'm maybe a little hungry. Like, that person isn't telling you they need a ton more food right now. So I tend to be okay going a little slower. But if I have someone who's like not sleeping, binging, thinking about food, like just like giving me a lot of feedback of like psychologically, I don't feel good.
Way too much of the deficit anyways.
Yeah. And I might just be like, okay, this is a person who needs more food more quickly, regardless of my thoughts about potentially overshooting. I'm like, we're going to just speed that track up a little bit because you need it.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's important to note there too is a lot of times people are really afraid of gaining weight. And what a lot of people don't want to hear is sometimes if we put on weight during a reverse diet, you may have needed it and it actually can be okay. Like, it's not always quote bad weight. Sometimes it is going to be muscle just because obviously you have more energy, you're going to probably recover better, but then also some of it could be fat. And like, as human beings, we should have a little bit of fat on our body, and like, that's okay.
Yep. Yep. I'm not you saying that. I have to say what I'm going to say. I'm going to keep the most PC way.
Oh no.
It's on glute training, and we're going to pivot. We can pivot, but
glute training.
We're in the glute era. We're in the glute era. Everyone's
of course,
glute training,
I want a fat ass.
Right. Hold on. Use the word you just, here's the word you just said. This is my other bugbear is like, people are like, this is my subjective.
Oh, I see where you're going. It's
my subjective though. So I'm just like me subjectively.
The moment you said that, I knew what you were
There's this misunderstanding. People are like, I want a great ass or like a dump truck. And I'm like, you understand that like the thing. And then, you know, I'll be like, hey, is there, again, maybe not so, you know, this creep, it's going to sound creepy, but I'll be like, hey, like, what does that mean to you? And they'll be like, oh, this chick. And they'll like send me, and I'm like, you understand that like her ass has like got a bunch of fat on it too. Like, that's part of what you probably mean by build my glutes. A lot of people, I want to build my glutes. I'm like, yeah, you're probably not doing that at like stage lean levels. And so that was another, I have a lot of people that are like definitely afraid of trying to gain weight, but also want to build like a whatever the terminology they'll use around glutes, like whatever sort of like phrasing they want to use. And I'm like, I just let you know, like, that probably means having more fat in that area too, which is always an interesting thing.
Well, it's interesting because obviously, as we know, and I hope many of my listeners know, because we talk about it at no end, of the fact that obviously we cannot control where we put on fat. Obviously, we've seen it time and time again, where as somebody does a more strategic deficit with strength training and then does bring their calories back up to more perceived maintenance, your fat distribution does tend to change a little bit. And so you kind of, your body just looks a little bit different, but we can't control it ultimately. But then also, it's interesting because I think that's been more normalized. And at least from the content that I see, it's been more normalized to understand that you need to strength train, you need to eat more, because it's always the whole like, oh, I'm torn between, do I want to eat less to have abs or do I want to eat more to have a big butt? And so it's been more normalized to do that, but it hasn't been, what's the right way of putting this? Because people are still scared of it. People are still terrified of gaining weight. They're still terrified of eating more and gaining the weight back. As somebody who gained weight, lost it and gained it again, and then lost it again, I get it. Like, I can understand the frustration. And so it was just, I just found that a good point to bring up, because we have a lot of gals who want to build a big butt. And I'm like, you have to remember the thing that comes with that is eating more food.
Nothing has done more for the unraveling of this, like, of, let's say, like, just like the skinny culture marketing towards women. Nothing has done a better job than CrossFit and glute gains, like this glute era, like CrossFit chicks of like, getting, just has been encouraged so many women to like go to do CrossFit. And I have my thoughts on CrossFit or whatever, but like, irrelevant of my thoughts on CrossFit, it got a lot of women to be like, oh, like, that looks cool and that's strong. And it got a barbell in their hands. It got them focused on strength and got us away from like, listen, cardio is amazing. I'm in my cardio era. And so, yeah.
Oh,
and
proud of you.
Thanks. And so, I think, yeah, I'm just very like grateful to the CrossFit era and that we're in the glute era. And I think you can take, they both have downsides, but like, dude, so many more women in today are like, I want to get really fucking strong at my hip thrust and I want to RDL a ton of weight and I want to split squat a ton of weight. And it's like, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it's interesting because I just turned 30 and it's funny because I have a lot of people in my area, because I live in Houston, we're young. They're like 18 to 22. And I like forget that I'm not anymore. But I like purposefully share my age because I think there's a lack of people in their 30s and 40s, like in the fitness space, especially women. And it is interesting because it's had me put a bigger emphasis on the fact that as women, as we tend to get older, our risk of osteoporosis goes up. And there's just so many other inherently scary things that come with aging as a woman, and strength training has so many benefits to it. And it was interesting because I'm going to assume you're going to agree with me on this just because there's facts around it, but I get really irritated by cycle sync people. Because as somebody in like, who very much, again, I have PCOS, I have clients who have it. And I'm like, you need to stop giving women an excuse to not strength train like 2 weeks out of the month and marketing to their insecurities and their fears, because you are actually harming people long-term by doing that. So I just also wanted to like, I think the glute era is great. I think the CrossFit era is great, but I also think this under-muscled revolution too, of especially around women specifically, because I know there's a lot of men who also don't strength train, kind of getting into it and stuff, but it's obviously a lot more normalized for men. Whereas like women have been taught for so long to fear it or to stick to like lightweights, or even when I did bar, like I had friends who did bar classes and Pilates and stuff. I was also doing a show at the same time. So I would just do it like once a week, like a bikini competition. So I was inherently getting leaner. And then a lot of people would be like, wow, your muscles are getting so long and lean from Pilates and from bar. And I was like, no, that's not what's happening. And I actually just did a video about that too, because the whole Miley Cyrus Pilates arms. And I'm like, it's not because she's doing Pilates. It's because she's building muscle. She is leaner. She's been doing this for 10 years. There's so many other things to it. So I just, that's my little like harp on the fact that I think that women's health long-term is now being put into consideration more. And there's just so many benefits to it.
Yeah, agreed. I took Pilates in college as like part of just like—
As a class?
Yeah, you needed to do an exercise credit as like a gen ed credit. And so I did Pilates, and it was like right at the time where I was just getting exposed to like anything remotely evidence-based, which by the way, what I thought then was not true, but like my teacher was, I just like tell this story sometimes. Like my teacher and I were like, we went at it a few times. So she's like a complete Pilates diehard. By the way, Pilates is awesome. Every movement is awesome. None of us are saying that there's not a time and a place for certain types of movement, but there is a certain time and place for certain types of movement. And so, we got into it with like a lot of the long lean muscle and like the importance of stability and just like some of those things. I just crack up thinking about that. She was like real diehard. She like slept with a blow up doll, Joseph Pilates. That's how crazy she was. Like, I don't feel weird saying crazy. Like, that's kind of crazy. And so she was like real into it. And Pilates is cool. Just like not for building muscle, you know, that's all. Yeah.
And I think that's the other hard conversation to have with people is a lot of people don't want to hear that the thing you love is great. It's great that you love it. And any type of movement is great movement. It doesn't make it the most optimal for your goals. And that's the really hard conversation to have with people, because people want to be told that everything they're doing is great. So, okay. Interesting. Sounds like we're aligned on a lot of stuff. There was something in there that I wanted to ask you about and I can't remember for the life of me now. No, I can't remember.
Seconds before I word vomit something else, I'm sure.
Go for a word vomit.
I don't know. What else was on our docket? We had, you mentioned something that I know things about biomechanics. That was, did I write that?
It's true,
but okay. I was wondering if I wrote
that. Did you think I was just making a guess?
No, I was like, that's nice of her to say. That's nice of me to say.
That you know something about biomechanics. I think you know like one or two things. It's fine.
Just know, I know I can name like the hip bones connected to the knee bone and stuff like that.
Oh
you know?
My gosh. Yeah. The, well, because you're certified in biomechanics and anatomy. Is that just through N1 or did you actually get... Okay, cool. I like N1. I think their stuff's great. For anyone who doesn't know, that's a certification. another one that's around. Another great like science-based wines, like they're very evidence-based, which is great. They've been around for a hot minute too. We can talk about biomechanics. I feel like that's a really unsexy topic via podcast. Yeah. I'm also going to have Austin Current on, who's like...
Love Austin. Just had him on my podcast.
Did you really?
The old podcast funny. Merry-go-round.
There we go. I feel like that's what we all... Because I just saw you Austin. On Mike's or someone's. You were just on someone's.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mike's.
So
yeah,
Mike's. And Jared's. Jared's. Yeah. Jared's. There we go. Yeah. We're all doing the merry-go-round. Sorry. Anyways, biomechanics. Super sexy.
Austin was N1's first employee, actually.
Really?
Yeah, that's how Austin and whatever, let him tell you, but that was, he was their first employee. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Employee might even be the wrong term, but he was him and Cass.
One of their first people.
Yeah, they were at the ground floor with that. So yeah, he's super smart, dude. Austin's a man.
What do you feel like is something that's under discussed in biomechanics?
The importance of biomechanics, the lack of importance of biomechanics. Sorry. Like, I'm actually like a, like the biomechanics community won't love me that much.
Interesting.
Well, just like, so I love learning about biomechanics.
You think there's an under importance?
Yep.
Under importance.
The overemphasis of biomechanics. Yeah.
The overemphasis. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I Coach Kasem is the founder of, and he's like, I wouldn't call him a friend, but like, I've taken all the courses. I've been out there twice. I'm going out there again in March. I love learning from Cass. He's like the smartest dude when it comes to biomechanics. I love it. And I, from an intellectual stimulation standpoint, absolutely love it. It's one of my like favorite hobbies to learn more about for sure. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's not inhibiting anybody. Like, we are spending the average person is spending so much time on arm path and shin angle. And I'm like, you know, from an intellectual and I have a group program with a certain whatever people in it and the goal is hypertrophy and they're exposed to that sort of content, and so I get a lot of like the is this important, is that important, and so I love biomechanics, and I think like everything else there's a diminishing return from an application perspective. You get the you get the most by like applying the basics for sure. And so I think that's we are also in the we're in the biomechanics era of like obsession with arm path and resistance profile and length of position.
You really feel like we're in that era?
Oh my God. Are we, first of all, again, it's like it depends like who you're following and like what you've curated as your visual diet. Like, and we are certainly in a place where like, we are in the weeds. Like we have learned so much in the last.
Toxify my feed a little bit more.
You're doing a good job. You're doing a great job. I'm impressed. But like, I just think that it's just like everything. Information is not good or bad. It's just how it's applied. And I think it's being applied to like the average mom and pop who like wants to build muscle and be healthy is like, I'm worried if my split squat is like more glute or quad biased. And that's true. We can do that. We totally can do that. But like, one of the things that gets lost in social media, that's like kind of bugbear ear grind, you know, thing is like, just if you could, at the end of every post, if somebody could spend 10 seconds at the end of a reel or something telling you where this falls in the hierarchy of importance, like I don't just care about the fact you're telling me, I care about how much I should care about it. And so I think that people will conveniently leave that. I mean, listen, who's doing this more than anybody? It's like single ingredient in the supermarket people, right? And they're
oh
like,
oh my God.
They might, what comes out of their mouth might have a truth somewhere in it, but they're neglecting to tell you or either voluntarily.
This probably has no relevance to you.
Yeah. And so I think with biomechanics, we're doing that a little bit. Like there's like battles being fought in the like upper tier of the biomechanics realm. And you have like an average person who's like, oh shit, like my arm path should be at 16 degrees or like, and so it's like, I just think that everything is information. It's just how you apply it. And I think that there's potential for us to all like relax and understand that from these little nuances in exercise execution aren't as important as training hard, close to failure, doing enough sets, like, you know, picking the right exercises for your structure, avoiding joint pain, like, you know, actually sticking to the same program for a while, you know, resting long enough to perform well in your sets. Like,
we don't need to shock our muscles.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Eating enough calories, sleeping. Yeah. Like, we rank like the things that are important for muscle growth. Like, whether I'm doing a bent knee RDL or like a stiff leg RDL is like not in the top 20. And so, I just want us to, and I, what's bad, what's interesting is what I just said is terrible for Instagram. It's like a terrible idea to do that.
It
for
is
like content. So
people, yeah, it's, and that's why it is funny. Cause I get what you're saying and I get why you wish people do that. I feel the same way. Like I literally just made a video today talking about how people will tell you don't eat fruit because fruit is too much sugar, but also sugar is so important for your brain. And like, it basically just goes back and forth of how like everyone's going to have a different opinion. Or it's like, even if you do a post about how it's really important to eat carbs, you're going to get people who have diabetes post like commenting on it. And you're like, I'm talking to general population, but it's like, we can't in every post be like, I'm talking to this specific person or this stuff doesn't actually apply to you. So it is really hard to navigate. So I guess an interesting question then would be, as a general population human, how could people more thoughtfully navigate through this information and figure out what is most applicable to them?
Yeah, it's tricky. Funny. We could talk about it for sure. I think there was a great clip from Dr. Mike. I don't know if people follow Dr. Mike, but Dr. Mike had Lane on his, what's up?
Is it
Tom? Not Israel. No. Dr. Mike, what's his name?
I think Dr. Mike. Okay.
Dr. Mike.
I like how I figured that out. I was like, Dr. Mike.
Yeah. Different.
I'm just kidding. Different.
Yeah. So he had Lane on his podcast.
I saw that.
And they went through this like, hey, what are the common strategies that these people are using to kind of circumnavigate like science and convince you that what they're saying is important? And so I recommend people go listen to that. If the goal was to like educate the consumer, we can't win the battle of misinformation.
No.
We might be able to increase the general education level of the consumer just enough to make them a little bit better at discerning this stuff. But to kind of listen, people should go listen to that, but I'll regurgitate what Lane said. And basically like, it's funny. He said, if you're listening to two people debate, the person who's less sure is more likely the person you should listen to. And like, it sounds like they don't actually know what they're talking about as much. And that is a key actually in some cases that in most cases, I'd say that that's the person that you should listen to, because the person who's speaking in a lot of absolutes, the person who's saying that this is the key, the person who happens to sell you that key, the person who doesn't seem skeptical, the person who doesn't ask for more context. Like if somebody asks me a question and Lane said the same thing and I was like, yes, like I'm asking you five questions back before I answer. And like, that's not what a charlatan would do. They would say, here's the link to my promo code for the thing that you can buy to fix this. And so I think you should seek out people who use less absolute language, who seem a little bit less sure, who are maybe a little bit more skeptical themselves, who, you know, seek to look for human data to back things up, like human outcome data, not rats, not, oh my God, not people are like this Petri dish study. I'm like, are you a Petri dish? Like, are you, is this
is that
you?
Fair?
Are you having 10,000 cans of Coke worth of aspartame in a Petri dish? No, that's not you. That's so funny.
I had a Dr. Joey Munoz on the other, like a couple weeks ago. He's great. And it was,
these circles are so funny. I was just on Joey's podcast. He's really? The man. I love Joey. Yeah.
It's funny. Cause I feel like I'm definitely not in the science based place. Cause obviously it's not really what I talk about. I talk more about like the human.
You do a great job mixing it in, but okay. I'll give you a little credit there. I'll throw you a bone. You do way better than you think at that, but okay.
Thanks. I try and just talk about like the human side of things. Cause like, I think my whole focus is obviously on the mental aspect. And I like psychology. I just find humans so fascinating. I also realized we're almost at the hour mark and I didn't even ask if you have something else. So I like need to be conscious of that.
I got a few minutes. Yeah.
Okay. But I try and just focus so much on like the psychological aspect and also the fact that like basically debunking a lot of the absolutes out there. And so it is funny how like there are so many people in the science-based place and I'm like, I don't think I belong here. And then like a lot of them will like message me and I'm like, thanks guys. But I definitely 100% agree. I actually just said that on my post today too, where I was like, if someone says always or never, or they're trying to sell you the thing that they are kind of talking about, like that woman I said earlier about like the insulin and all this, she's like selling a whole like keto thing. And I'm like, well, yeah, of course she's going to say that like never eat carbs because she's selling something that's keto. So it's like that falls perfectly. But I was like, run, like just run away. But I think that was great. And I think that was so important. And also I saw that clip and I definitely do agree that like, you guys should go listen to Dr. Mike's, it's so funny how like you can, there's so many Dr. Mike's, even if you get in this space, but it's the Dr. Mike, I feel like he's like the main one, but No, I'm glad I had you on, Jordan. Like I said, it's been interesting because we have never really spoke before. Obviously, we see each other's content and stuff, but I feel like I continue to appreciate meeting people who have a similar thought process on things, but also obviously I also appreciate how interested you are in continuing your education, I think is a good way of putting it. Because like, I think that a lot of people kind of stop when they feel like they know enough. And I think that that can actually be more harmful than helpful. And so I think that's really great.
That's super nice. Thank you.
Yeah. Where can people find you?
Yeah, I hang out on Instagram mostly, Jordan Lips Fitness. I repost stuff to TikTok, but TikTok is not good for my mental health. So I'm not really there.
Oh, fair enough.
And TikTok's wild.
Is it the comments or is it the
comments content? Are wild.
People are mean. Very mean.
Is it just on average that they're younger and that's like it comes with it?
I think that's what it is. I think because this is now all opinion. We're gonna like move into an interesting realm here, but opinion wise, I think the younger generation tends to get more and more desensitized to what they say, and it's actually kind of alarming in my opinion. I have two younger sisters who are 9 and 13, and like they're my favorite humans. They're angels. But some of the people on TikTok are very scary. And like, I hear about like their friends and stuff commenting on things. And I'm like, that's not okay. Like you wouldn't say that to someone's face. And this is giving you false security about what you're saying. So yeah, I think that's why.
I also think there's more misinformation on TikTok on average. Like the percentage of misinformation is higher on TikTok. And so people are like,
I really need to toxic up my feed a little bit, guys.
Yeah, you got too many.
I'm on a good side of like everything.
You gotta get on like medical medium or something. You'll find some good stuff. Yeah.
I like how I'm very conscious of what I consume because I don't want all the negativity and all the like misinformation, but I get tagged in it a lot to like discuss it. And so I'm like, oh, okay.
I'm going down the route lately of getting like, it's, you know, what's funny is like, it's helpful for me because it fuels my fire so much. Like, it fuels me. I get frustrated and I'm like, yep, this is why I do what I do. Like, I want to help. I see like one Flav City post and I'm like, great. Oh, here's gosh, like months of motivation for me to keep trying to do good work.
People got so mad when I did a post about him and I was like, I didn't attack him. I don't know him, but I'm attacking his content because it's like hypocritical. In one post, my favorite example is in one post, he literally said, don't get this because there's too much added sugar in it. Literally the next item he shared had sugar in it. And he was like, this is a great item. And I'm like, you can't tell people don't have added sugar ever and then go, but this one's okay. That's not how this works. That's why it should run. So yeah,
your following's too big. Once your following is that big, like you can't, the trolls just come out. Like it's just, I think your following gets so big.
Well, what's interesting is I never used to get very like many negative comments and I don't know what happened where I've somehow gotten onto other people's sides of the internet or if there's just more people around now or whatever it is. But like, I've definitely gotten more as of late and I'm like, where are you guys coming from? And I'm like, I don't want you here. You weren't invited.
Yeah, they don't need an invite. They find you.
No, sorry. Yeah. So you're on Instagram. You have a podcast. Anywhere else they can find
I have a podcast.
So we'll have everything linked down below.
Cool. Just do that. And you'll be on the podcast at some point. We'll ask you about your bugbears and we'll get you rambling.
It's funny. I don't feel like I have as many bugbears. I do have a lot of bugbears. That's a lie. I get really angry about stuff. I just don't like bullies.
You're like Elastigirl. I crack up at the Elastigirl post. I say that because that's what my brain, when you were like, you can edit videos and you gave yourself like the crazy Elastigirl fit where you're like, I have no waist and my hips are like.
People didn't realize that the beginning was edited.
It's crazy. I mean, let's be totally honest. It's frightening as hell. It's frightening that you can't tell. And that
you can't. I didn't change it back, you wouldn't have noticed.
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah.
Even I saw that and I was like, oh, I have no waist. Yeah. But no, I think that's the stuff that gets me fired up is like, I don't like assholes. I don't like bullies. That's the stuff that makes me angry. We could go down the whole rabbit hole of, I guess I would be curious in your opinion of it. I know we kind of just like pretended like we were going to wrap stuff up, but I like made the whole post about how being fat isn't a choice. And then we were just like, you're like, come here.
Come on up here.
There we go. We have the fluffers.
I thought we were wrapping up. So we are wrapping up.
You're fine. We can talk about that another time. Hi.
We'll start with that on my pod.
There's such a cute little fluffer. If you guys didn't guess already, he brought his dogs up. But thank you so much for being on, Jordan. And I really appreciate it. I feel like there's everyone, obviously, go follow him, check out his podcast, all that great stuff. And as always, don't be a dick, especially to yourself. And I'll see you in the next one.